Welcome to Inside the Artist. My name is Rachel Corman. I'm very excited for my guest today to be Phil Simmons, who is a producer, musical director, and bass player from the UK. He also happens to be one of my dear friends, so this conversation is probably a little bit more personal than I typically have it be. He first started out playing bass for Jesse J. He left that to start his own band and has then moved to LA to pursue being a musical director and a producer, writing his own music and working with other artists. So there's a lot to talk about with Phil. We dive into it all. So enjoy. Here is my interview with Phil Simmons. Are you nervous?
I'm a little bit. I find this really weird. So, yes.
Why do you find this weird?
I don't know.
Because we know so much about each other and I'm about to interview you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Or I'm putting you on the spot.
Both. And you know a lot about me, and I'm worried what you're going to ask.
I have a whole list of questions for you. God. Thanks for doing this. It's been a long time coming.
It's an absolute pleasure, Rachel.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you. You have been such a support to me when I started this. So I'm excited to sit down and talk to you.
Wonderful.
So bass player, musical director,
yes.
Producer.
Uh-huh.
We're sitting here in your studio.
Currently. Yeah.
It's pretty rad. You got some new guitars.
Yeah, there's a lot of... We have a lot of stuff in the studio at the moment. It's, the toys.
And this is where the magic happens.
This is where the magic happens. This is where all the music gets made.
So for people who don't know, you are a very talented bass player.
Right, yeah.
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 I know I'm biased because I'm your friend, but mm-hmm. you are a very talented bass player.
Thank you, Rachel.
You've played with some amazing pop stars. You've toured the world.
Mm-hmm.
Most famously, you played with Jesse J.
Yeah. Yep.
And you left that to pursue your own music.
I did.
You started the band Basement Project, which I really want to talk about.
Uh-huh. For sure.
And then you moved to LA, and you have been pursuing producing and writing your own music.
Mm-hmm.
So let's dive in. Let's get into it.
Let's go.
Okay. So when did you first pick up the bass?
Well, I picked up the bass after playing guitar.
You played guitar first.
I did actually play guitar first, but... Someone offered me some money to play bass. And, well, no. I played bass in a band when I was 14,
okay.
I think. And it was like a little pop rock band. But I didn't really play bass. So I learned in that. And then when I was at college, there was no bass players. So, and this is English college. So this is like 16 to 18.
Yeah, you guys call college like our high school.
Yeah, I guess.
And then university is... Okay,
yeah.
So when you were in... So 16, 17.
Yeah. Then I kind of started playing bass because there wasn't any bass players, but it just kind of connected and I could get paid for it pretty quickly. And that was it. It's kind of a bit backwards.
But. So was guitar your initial passion?
Just music.
Just music in general.
To be honest. But yeah, guitar was what I played first when I was 10. I think I got my first guitar.
And why music? Like, when did you first realize you had a passion for music?
I guess just being surrounded by music. Probably my dad and my eldest brother, Steve.
They're musicians as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah, my dad had a great taste in music, so probably helped. Vaguely remember dancing around Status Quo when I was 5, and I think that was the band for me that got me into music, which... Is it's good stuff. And then the Police and like Paul Simon.
You're a big Sting fan.
I'm a big Sting fan.
Well, is that where the bass passion comes from as well? I know it wasn't your initial thought that you wanted to play bass, but do you think his influence made an impact on you in wanting to play, or no? It's totally separate.
Definitely. I think it's separate. I think it's been more of just music. Like, it's influenced my music and my tastes, but not specifically my bass playing.
Okay.
I don't really know what influenced that, to be honest. And like, my eldest brother, Steve's a drummer. So growing up, I listened to drummers' records, like Dennis Chambers and Dave Weckl and stuff. So I would know the drummers and I'd be into the bass on those records, but I would only know the drummers and I didn't really know who was playing bass. And I think I'd always associate myself with drums. As a bass player,
yeah,
it's a bit backwards. But
No, but you are, I think, the true definition of an artist, because you do. You eat, breathe, sleep, music. That's what you do, and it's what you love. And I've seen you perform, and I've never seen such a big smile on your face when you're performing.
Yeah.
And after maybe a couple of beers as well. Both.
Maybe.
Full disclosure.
I mean, that happens at Ronnie Scott, so that's probably what you're
Okay, so you played... So, sorry, let's get back to your story. So, you played bass in high school, or what you guys call college. And from there, what did you... What were the steps you took from there?
I was just playing, so then I started gigging, and then I was doing theatre shows, like, in the pit band stuff for, like, theatre shows, and... I was playing with a Bangra fusion band doing like the World Music Festival stuff called Kismet. And, but I was actually playing guitar for them. That's a side note. And then I went to university in London playing bass. And then within a year of that, I was kind of doing the touring thing.
So how did you get your first touring job? Did you get it right out of university?
I was still at uni when I was playing with Jesse.
You were?
Mm-hmm.
So how, did you have to leave school early to do that?
I mean, I think the great thing about the university that I went to, I was able to tour and do all of that stuff anyways at the same time, which was great. And I think... Yeah, I don't really know how it all came about, though. It just kind of happened.
What do you mean, kind of just happened? No, so tell me, how did you hear about the Jesse gig?
I got a phone call. I didn't hear about that. That was the...
Who'd you get a call from?
The MD.
Okay.
Kojo
Samu. Just someone you knew?
Kojo came down to a couple of gigs, like 7 or 8 months before he called me to do the Jesse thing. And so what, I was in my second year at uni at the time. And I think he came down to my jam night, probably through like a couple of friends' recommendations, I think. And then was just asked me if I was like up for doing work or whatever, and then just said he would be in touch. And then 6 months later, he called me for the Jesse thing.
And you were playing with her at the very beginning stages of her career. So you kind of saw the evolution.
I wasn't there at the very beginning.
Okay.
Because that would kind of have to take away from the fact that she did like 7 years of hard work before she blew up.
Right. I should say the beginning of the world tours.
I was there for the start of the Who You Are campaign.
Okay.
That first album. So I think Do It Like a Dude had been out for a month. And then we started playing and Price Tag came out like a couple of weeks after I joined. And then the album came out and then... That was like 3.5 years.
Three and a half years you played with her?
Yeah. That first album, I think, was like 3.5 years.
I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah.
And you toured the entire world. I mean, you went everywhere. And how old were you?
I didn't tour the continent of Africa.
Okay. Maybe not Africa, but I think
it's the only continent that we didn't do.
Well, it still sounds pretty amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
How old were you at the time?
I think I was 20, 21.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it like touring the world at such a young age?
I learned a lot of life lessons.
What did you learn?
I think, you know, at the time, my aspirations were to be a bass player and to tour. And I think I was very, very lucky that I got to achieve that at such a young age. But I think with that comes a lot of extra life stuff to learn, which is just like how people treat you or how you see yourself. And but it was amazing. Musically, it was amazing. I'm thankful for being able to play those kind of shows and experience those kind of things, which is, you know, something. It's just been incredible.
What did you learn about the music industry
with that? That it's ruthless, probably. That session musicians are the first ones to complain, but they have the easiest job.
But how did that influence the music you're making now? I mean, that experience, I'm sure, helped teach you about the industry.
Yeah, I don't think the industry, what it taught to me about the industry has anything to do with the music, but my experiences influence my music and how I view things and the music I want to make based on being involved with or like around such a mainstream kind of successful artist. That's always going to influence, because you see so much of like the dark side of the music and how hard people work and how brutal the public eye or being in the public eye can be.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I guess that's something I kind of took from it, but I don't know. The young years.
It's put you on the path you are now.
It has. It's part of my story.
So from there, you, I know, took a big risk and you left that steady job in order to start your own career.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about that. Why did you decide to make that decision?
There was two factors that came into leaving and stepping away from that. I felt like I'd achieved everything I wanted to, and I was very, very thankful for all of those experiences, but I really wanted to make some music that I felt passionate about. You know, playing in the session world was, you're playing someone else's music and it's kind of hard to really feel invested in that, you know.
Because you're a songwriter as well, so you have a lot that you want to mm-hmm. share with the world.
Yeah, yeah, and I feel like most people get into music for different things, and I don't think I got into music to play someone else's music, you know. Whatever that ends up looking like, I don't know, but yeah, so the two factors is that I had this band called Basement Project, and I really wanted to push into that and finish the album that we were working on and commit to that. And then I also had the Angel Hayes MDing
job. You were
MDing
for her,
well,
right?
I only started that 2 days before my last gig with Jesse. So I was in rehearsals for MDing Angel, and that was like the first big kind of MDing thing, and that came from I got that through a guy called Steve Anderson, who's Kylie's MD and recommended me. So yeah, so those two factors were kind of like the reason why I left Jesse, and I think just wanting to
take the next step.
Yeah, of course. Like I say, I was very lucky that I got to achieve so much in that one campaign. I didn't feel like I needed to do it.
You achieved
anymore.
Everything you needed,
yeah.
To, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was it.
And so you MD'd for Angel Hayes. I know you did some stuff with Rizzle Kicks as well.
Yeah, well, no, the Rizzle stuff was with Basement.
Okay, let's talk about Basement Project.
Mm-hmm.
W3s, which, by the way, your brother told me when I was recently in London that you called it W3s because it was the start of the zip code that you guys played.
Okay, no.
So do the, I ha- you have to tell it.
There's it goes even further back, and I don't think people really knew about this. But so when I was at university, one of my assignments for one of my classes for part of the year was music business. We had to set up like a company or do some sort of, I don't know, make some sort of business thing to do with music, and I can't even remember what it was. So me and my friend Nick Pinchback set up a thing called W3 Music Promotions, which was our postcode, and we started looking at jazz gigs in London, and he went to hotels and provided residencies for hotels, and then I went to the Grand Union Bar to do like a live music night, which ended up being a trio jazz gig. And then on the second gig, this guy called Tim Owen came down and played sax just to jam, and then it kind of spiraled from there. But yes, it was a postcode related thing. That was.
So you started this group. So I didn't realize it started from a project for university.
Kind of, yeah.
But you have a bunch of, were your other friends that were in the group, did they also go to your same music school?
No.
Okay, so these are just buddies you had in London.
Mm-hmm.
Other
a couple
musicians.
Of, well, the two musicians that played the very first one did. They were in, I think they'd left already though, but that was Tom Hill and Phil Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but the rest of the guys just through friends and you know, playing.
So you started this group, and this was, remind me, like, the time period. Is this before you went on tour or after?
I think I was on tour at the same time.
The same time. Okay, so yeah. When you would come back to London on break or whatever, you would get together with these guys and jam.
Oh, no, it always happened. I think it was every Wednesday, and if I was away, I would just ask a bass player to fill in.
Got it. Okay, and so they still did it every week.
That was kind of the thing, yeah. It was just a collective, and it kind of happened. It's just an incredible group of people that it just seemed to work out. And all of us were at the stage of our careers where we could afford to do something like that, where we only got paid like £10 each to do it. And I think the reason why it kind of succeeded the way it did was purely because we were all there just to play.
It was about the passion you had for music.
Yeah, I think so.
That, didn't the other artists, they were all touring artists as well, played with other musicians, right?
The other session guys.
The other session guys.
Yeah, the amazing thing about that whole thing, and you can't really put it down to anyone's, anything specific or one person or two people. It was just, we all started working after the W3 jam started. And it was just like one of those grounding things we all kind of came back to. And then like within it's still going, but in the first 3 or 4 years, you could see everyone's careers taking off. And it was, you know, we all had this one grounding. We would come back to the same place and just shed, basically.
That must make it feel like a nice home environment. Like, you know, like you say, a good grounding experience, because you're coming off tour and you just want to hang with your buddies and have a good time and jam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Really well put.
Yeah, and it was... it was amazing just to see how it grew from 3 people in a pub when no one went, which was the first time.
Where did it start at?
The Grand Union Bar in Ravenscourt Park, which is called something else now. I can't remember. It's on Goldhawk Road.
So how many years ago was that?
That was 2010, 2009, 2010, something like that.
Okay. And then now you guys have a weekly thing at Ronnie Scott's.
Now it's at Ronnie Scott's, yeah. So it moved to Ronnie Scott's. We took a break for 7-8 months. And I think that was when the focus of it became more Basement Project, and we wanted to put out a record. And not everyone in the jam was involved with the band, but that was kind of the focus for the kind of a core group of people. And then we were approached by Simon, who's the managing director at Ronnie Scott's, to start.
So he was coming to see your gigs at the pub.
He was, yeah. He was leaving. I think, I don't even know where he heard about it, but yeah.
So you guys didn't approach Ronnie Scott's? They came to you?
Yeah, they came to us, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was cool.
How did you spread the word about your jams?
I don't really know. I guess we made a couple of videos.
Okay.
Told a couple of people.
Really?
And I don't even know how I blew up the way it did. And I say that because it went from, like, no one in the pub and seeing it to like 250 people in a pub on a Wednesday night in West London. And like,
I mean, it's really remarkable. You're making it sound like, oh, people just came. Like, it's really remarkable what you guys did. Like you say, it started with 3 people, just some buddies. And again, I just learned from talking to you that it started as a school assignment. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And then it becoming just through word of mouth, just blowing up. And now you still, to this day at Ronnie Scott's, have a weekly residency there.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in LA now, but the guys still do it every week.
They do, and I love
really
going
remarkable.
Back to play as well.
And I've seen you play there, and it's quite a show.
Yeah,
you MC it, you run the shots, you tell people what's going on.
Oh, I just play bass.
Don't just play bass, though. You talk to the crowd.
The guys are doing an amazing job. Everyone there that's still running it, and I know Ed Mitchell kind of took the reins when I left, and that was amazing. And I think where it's gone is just you know, from strengths to strength, and it's evolving in its own way, in its own natural way, which is great. But yeah, it's amazing, and everyone that was a part of it, and I feel very incredibly lucky to have been around and to watch it. And again, we're all like early 20s and learning so much, and like learning about ourselves and how we play, and I just think it was a nice grounding thing to have.
And so was Basement Project your idea to get you guys to actually form a band?
Yeah.
To make it more than just a jam?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't think anyone else in the band would have wanted to call it Basement Project. Spelt as a bass.
It's spelled B-A-S-S.
A terrible name M-E-N-T. that just stuck, I guess. Yeah, I guess so. I mean,
so tell me about that. When did you come up with the idea, and how did you approach the guys with it?
I think it was just wanting... I just love making music, and I think it was one of those ones where I just wanted to make an album. And there were so many great players around, so it was just like, let's make an album.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of it. I did a session at a studio in Baker Street, which we ended up like doing a lot of the album there, but the early days, and in 2011, I think, when the band wasn't really going on, but me and Mike Davies and a couple other guys wrote a few songs, and we just recorded it. And then it was from that, it was like, oh, let's do a band. And, you know, the band had... Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of musicians. It was great.
It was a huge band. Then you released an album.
Put out an album.
You toured a bit, right? Didn't mm-hmm. you opened up for... Is that when you opened up for Rizzle Kicks?
We opened up for Rizzle Kicks. We opened up for the Brand New Heavies. Yeah, we did our own shows. We did some stuff in Europe, which was cool.
How many people are in the band? Because that's a lot of people to travel.
I think the biggest point is probably 12 of us, maybe. Wow. I don't really know. It was just, it was a bit of a free-for-all. And I think, you know, with that many people and everyone being so young, it probably comes with a lot of, like, issues. And I think in hindsight, it would have been great to have like structured it better,
but you all did it for the love of making music. For not, it was there's no other yeah. reason.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. we definitely did.
And you produced it, right?
Myself and Mike and Jared Pizzata and Juan Ayala all worked on the record from that standpoint, from a production standpoint, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we had Betty Wright on a song and Rizzle Kicks on a song, and that was great. And it was kind of a crazy time.
I'm curious how you found the time, the money, and the space to record it, because again, this being primarily a passion project of yours, for someone who isn't in the music industry, how do you go about making an album? I mean, because you guys recorded at a legit studio. You recorded behind the scenes videos, I remember, and mm-hmm. would post them, mm-hmm. and it was so professionally done. Like, how do you go about doing that?
I think everyone that was in the band and around the band that was supporting us all invested time and money, and we had some other people that came in and helped out, but at the end of the day, we all just like invested in it. Some people more with time, some people more with money, and mm-hmm. I don't really want to be pointing at who, but at the end of the day, it's like everyone
just believed in it.
Everyone believed in it, and everyone was willing to, you know, to invest, and that was the amazing thing. And however it worked out, and obviously the band's not around anymore, but everyone invested in it, and it, you know, what we achieved was pretty crazy, mm-hmm. I think. So,
and do a lot of those same guys still play at Ronnie Scott's, or is everyone kind of doing their own thing?
I mean, everyone's the amazing thing about the band is I think seven, eight of the guys are now doing their own original project, and that's incredible to see too. Or people that have been in the band or that were in the band at some point are now doing their own thing, and that's great. And a lot of the same guys play at Ronnie Scott's, which is great. I don't know though, because I'm not there.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your move to LA. So you've been in LA, what, like 2 years now?
A little over 2 years, yeah.
That's so crazy.
Kind of.
I've known you for 5 years.
This is the sixth year.
Is this the sixth year?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
We're coming in 2012.
We met in 2012. You know more than me.
Of course. What about when we met?
Yes.
Oh, come on, Rachel.
We met in 2012. But yeah, you made the official move in, so what, like January
2016. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And that's a huge move because you come from a small town in England.
Yeah, I grew up in Thrapston, but...
Okay,
yeah.
I don't know where Thrapston is.
It's right next to Oundle.
Next to Oundle. Okay, yeah, I was just in Oundle, so I like to say Oundle now.
Yeah.
You know, you've taken a lot of risks in your career. You know, it's like you've known that this is what you want to pursue, and it's just remarkable that you've gone from, you know, going to school in London, getting an amazing, I want to say, somewhat first job, touring with a big pop star, and then working on your own music, and then moving to LA to pursue your own career.
Uh-huh.
As, you know, now you're producing music with other artists, you're writing your own stuff, you're doing so much, and you're also very well connected. We haven't mentioned that. You're very well connected here and know a lot of people in the industry. And it's just remarkable what you've done. And it just seems like...
Thanks, Rach.
Yeah. I guess my question is, has LA always been a goal for you, or did that just... Was that just kind of the next step
LA
you wanted to take?
Yeah, LA was always a goal. So there's... a few different things of like why I'm here and what I'm doing. And I guess I'll just go back. So the first time I came out to LA was with Jess. And then the times after that, I was coming out with my old manager, Leon, with Basement. And that's when I met you.
Uh-huh.
And then I was coming out on writing trips. Up until the point where I moved. And I moved because I was musical director for Conrad Saul, and he asked me to come out, and I did. And at the same time as doing like the producing and the writing and all of that stuff. Yeah, LA has always been a goal for me. Whether or not it's the end goal, I don't think so. I don't know. But
the opportunity with Conrad was huge.
I'm incredibly thankful for Con, yeah, for sure. And it happened really quickly. Like we did the UK, like European tour with him in like the October, November of 2015. November, he was like, can you move to LA? I'd already got my visa application ready, bar my sponsor and a job. Because I knew I wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
My letters were already there. And then within a month, I'd moved. Which is quick, to be honest, from being like, oh, okay, now I have a job, now I'm going to go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's something I always wanted to do.
Did I hear your friends met you at the airport with champagne?
Yeah, Chris and Ed.
That's like, you're going to America.
Yeah, well, I think those guys know how much I wanted to. I was trying to get out to LA on a permanent situation for a few years,
mm-hmm.
and I just wanted to make sure it was right at the right time in the right way. And I turned down a job I don't know how long before, like a year before.
Why did you turn it down?
It wasn't right.
Okay.
I'd like an opportunity to come out here.
Oh, it would have been an opportunity in LA?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't talk about it.
Okay. But interesting, but you just know that that wasn't right.
It wasn't right.
But see, that's what you're really smart, though. You have to trust those instincts. Maybe you wouldn't have gotten the opportunity with Conrad if you took the other job. Who knows?
I mean, I would have been here. That's for sure.
Did you know Conrad at the time, though?
No. So I met Conrad through, I think, Leo Cohen hit up someone at Big Life Management, and then I was put forward from that and in the UK. But no, I would have been here. It wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough. It was an interesting thing, but I'm here now, and it's been the hardest thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah,
it's been a crazy, incredible time creatively, but it's been, you know, LA.
Can we talk about the struggles a bit?
Sure.
What has been the biggest challenge for you?
I really don't know. I think, you know, from a creative standpoint, I've been trying to find myself and what I want to do in music. And like I say, I think I was very lucky at a young age to experience success in a certain field. And a big thing of like stepping away from that and just like doing the grind, if I say it's like as a producer or a writer, you know, just because I've played with someone like Jesse or the other artists I was lucky enough to play with doesn't mean I could write for them or produce for them. You know, I had to learn, and that's been challenging. trying to find my own sound and my own voice in my own songs creatively is something that's been challenging. Being in a different country is challenging, like a way, you know, but I have a load of friends and I had a lot of friends before I moved out, so that's not an issue.
I'm sure that made the transition easier.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that's one thing I'd tell anyone if they're talking about wanting to move out to LA, or it's like, well, make sure you can just get out for a long period of time beforehand and have a good support network, because it's tough. I mean, things don't happen overnight, and I don't really know what, I mean, there's been so much that's been challenging, but incredible and incredibly good for my creativity, I guess, and the music I'm making, and I'm pretty happy with how that's all kind of sounding, to the point where I'm talking about it, and I didn't really want to come on here until I had something to say.
It's true. I've been trying to get you to come on for a while.
Over a year.
So what made you say yes now?
I guess I just needed to do it. I think.
It was time. But there's a lot that you're working on right now, too. Do you want to talk about what you're working on now?
There's some stuff I can talk about. There's some stuff I don't know if I will.
You don't have to talk about the things you can't. Some secret projects. That's good. Some secret projects.
No, I mean, I feel very fortunate. I'm getting to work with a lot of incredibly talented people right now. And I hope the music comes out, and that'll be great. I've been working with, doing a lot of writing with Erin Allen Kane. That's been fun. I don't know how the project's going to look and when this conversation's going to come out online, or when any of her music, if and how that kind of folds.
But that's unfolds. Where a lot of your attention has been lately. You guys have been working together.
We've done like it's probably a month or so of like, you know, writing and stuff. We have a lot of really cool songs, and we have a lot more to do, I think. But that's been fun. And then my own stuff I've been doing. I've just wrapped like 3 EPs and that's all done.
So. It's amazing that you're able to divide your time into your own personal music that you want to write about, and then also working with artists. It kind of seems like that's been your dream, and you are able to kind of balance both.
Mm. Well, my own stuff I kind of do in blocks of like 3 days. And then I don't do it for a while.
But you write really quickly. Lighthouse, didn't you write that in like a day?
Lighthouse.
You wrote it in a day and then posted a video. And yeah, it went maybe. Like viral. Do you remember that? You got thousands of views in like a day when you posted that.
Yeah, that was cool. I've been doing... So my own project, I guess I've got to put out soon, is this... like a 3-part kind of concept record,
which like is 3 really long tracks.
Yeah, it's like 3 20-minute songs. Well, they could be broken up into songs, but I kind of just want to, I'm going to release them as just like how I want people to hear them. And it's, they're called like, it's the Chronicles of Saint Arc, I think I'll probably call it. I don't know.
Back to the piano.
Pending titles.
Did you write it all on the piano?
So I wrote the first one when I got the piano, which was in November, and the second one I did the end of December, and the third one I did like a few weeks ago or a week ago or something, and each one's kind of based around different instruments, I guess. I don't really know. It's just been, you know, it's been a lot of stuff that I needed to
to get out,
to say.
So in one of the videos you posted, you said you're making the music you've always wanted to make. Can you tell me more about that?
I think, what video did I post?
It was on one of the videos of your singles that you've written. I did my homework, Phil.
You did your homework.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think right now the music that I've been making, especially for myself, it's just everything I need to say. I feel like I've been as honest to myself in terms of my lyric writing, and the soundscape of everything is where it needs to be, and I feel like it's just everything very present for me right now. I don't really know the best way of explaining it other than that. It's just yeah, it's just what it needs to be right now.
What type of things are you writing about?
Oh, man, that's a...
You don't have to get specific if you don't want to, but you know.
I mean, just life, really. I've experienced a lot of life, especially the last 3 or 4 years. It's been a lot of growth and a lot of, like, understanding myself and...
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds all, like, hippie and whatever, but...
Do you feel like you've been able to just be more honest with yourself in your music?
I mean, I think the music's pretty honest.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the last couple of EPs have just been very...
You lit up open. When I asked you that. I just want to point that out. No, you got really excited.
I'm excited to share the music with people and not for any reason of just like, it's just been very therapeutic. You know, I'm kind of happy with it all. And I think it's been a long time since I've really been just like, all right, yeah, this is me right now. And that's a period of time. And I feel like I've said everything I needed to say about the last period of time that I wanted to write about. And now I just want to kind of get it out. And
how does it feel, the difference between touring, being a session artist, and being in the studio writing your own music?
Like session musician?
Yeah, like what's the difference?
Well...
for you personally.
Oh, I got paid for being a session musician, and I haven't been paid for doing my own music. I'm just creatively fulfilled, and that's it. Like, I'm not making music for anyone other than myself, and that's been a long process to kind of get to that point where I'm like, this is exactly what I want it to be. And I didn't get that opportunity as a session musician. But then doing those, I'm not going to experience playing like Wembley Stadium with my own music. That's not, it's not that kind of music. And I'm so thankful that I have experienced stuff like that with Jesse. And that was great. So that's the difference between the...
But you find this more creatively fulfilling. Because you're writing about things that are personal to you.
I mean, yeah, that's, you can't really compare it, to be honest. There are some people that would rather to do the touring stuff and experience, like, you know, being on tour buses or private jets and big arenas and stadiums and all that sort of stuff.
But like you said, you've experienced that and you're so grateful for it. So it's like now it's time to do
another experience. I did it at a young age, and there's a part of me that kind of wants to maybe experience it, like, this session stuff in a different mindset or understanding life a bit more, not being like an arrogant young child, which is, you know, but yeah, right now I don't want that to be like a life I live. I kind of want to just make music that makes me happy, and you know, if people can respond to it, that's great. If they don't, that's great. I don't mind if people don't like it. And it's been a long time trying to find my own voice, especially being surrounded by so many incredible singers my whole life in music. You know, there's just so many amazing friends. They're just so talented. So finding my own voice has been challenging, and being okay with the sound of it, and knowing that it's just there to tell the story that I've experienced, and that's all right.
Because we even said you sing your own music as well.
Uh-huh.
You produce it, write it, and you sing on it.
Saint Arc. It's basically, I started writing this music based off when I got the piano, which is Stark, and that was the only thing I started calling all the songs when I was writing them, was Saint Arc. It was just Stark, and it's on the piano. And
yeah, the piano says Stark.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, cool. So that can just be like a personified version of myself in a piano on the music. I don't know. You'll have to hear it, and the piano features in a lot in the first one. I remade one song from an EP I put out last year that is on the EP, and the first EP is called In the Oak, or like Part One In the Oak, and it's more of just looking at that last year and kind of addressing some stuff. And I wanted to start that record off with a song that I put out previously that I felt like started off the music and in the right way. So I took everything else down offline and
kind of wanted to start, have a fresh start.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's like, what, I don't really understand the fresh start things. Interesting, it's just a moment in time that I made that music and that was right for that moment and that's all right. And the previous records I've made for myself that I'm not going to release are the same thing. And it's just an important process in my musical journey.
But you don't feel like it's right to release. You just wanted to make it for you.
I just wanted to take it down. I didn't feel like it was right.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I feel like the stories have changed and I'm just looking forward to putting out what I've been working on and just, you know, for myself.
And you've been in a real creative mindset. I mean, you've been in the studio a lot. I know you took a break from social media,
mm-hmm.
which... Do you want to talk a little bit about that and how that's changed your mindset when you're here creating?
I mean, yeah, it's helped some positivity. I think everyone can kind of admit that social media can be a pretty depressing thing. I struggled a lot with that and those kind of, especially in LA as well, and the loneliness and seeing everyone's glimpses of their incredible lives and stepping away from it allowed me to be a lot more present in what I'm doing and I would find myself like, do I need to post anything to share it to people that don't really care about my life? So coming off it was amazing, and there's always that ongoing battle with any creative. It's like, well, I need it for my career, I need it to like share and I need it so people can see it. And that's just the stigma around social media and in the creative industries, at least. Apart from stepping away from it, just allowed me to be really present in the music I was making and in finding who I am and experiencing like life a bit more. And that's been great. So yeah, I am off social media at the moment. Mm-hmm. Or I have been. I hope to stay off it, but I don't know.
You might go back on how do you promote the music?
Well, that's the ongoing thing, right?
It's a tool for that.
It's amazing. It's also depressing as hell.
But I'm sure it also takes up a lot of your time if you're in the studio. And I think it's really cool that you've made this decision to take a break and just focus on creating.
Mm.
Probably saves a lot of time and it maybe just clears your head a bit.
Well, isn't it? Well, they say if you spend up to like 2 hours a day on social media, then it adds up to like a month of your year.
Oh, gosh.
So it's like, it's...
That's scary.
Yeah, of course. I don't know if those facts are exactly right, but I'm sure someone can do some maths for me.
I'm going to quote Phil Simmons on that one.
I can't remember specifically, but yeah, it's just been really good to work out. And like I say, life's been really interesting and the most challenging thing I've ever done is moving to America and trying to do different things in music as... And stepping away from all of it and trying to be present in what I'm making and how I'm making it has been really good. I don't know if it's the right thing to do. I don't know whether being out of touch with what's going on musically is a good thing. I don't know whether, you know, not seeing what people are up to or like what's going on. I don't know. I also don't really care because I'm kind of happy in the studio at the moment. So.
Yeah. Do you miss London?
I miss London so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you happy here, though? Do you think you'll stay here for a bit?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where life's taking me, to be honest.
How is the music industry in LA different than London?
I am going to stand by this, and I don't know if this is a good thing to say, but I still think, like, London creatively is a better place than Los Angeles. But I think the industry is probably a little bit better in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunities are better depending on what you want to do.
Do you feel like you've gotten more opportunities here that you wouldn't have gotten if you stayed in London?
I think in England, people see me as a bass player. So like even trying to get rid of the stigma of like when I was musical directing, people would, you know, generally look at you, industry or like your peers or whatever, would just be like, well, no, you're a bass player, like mm-hmm. stay in your lane.
Right.
Which is generalizing, and I'm not trying to. I know there's a lot of people that don't do that, but I find that in America, everyone's a bit more open for you doing different things. So they'll be like, oh, okay, I know you as a musical director for so-and-so, but you produce, I'd love to hear some of your music. Whereas in the UK, I've always had the impression that people don't really care. It's like, stay in your lane. I'm generalizing, and
I feel like in LA, though, people wear multiple hats here as well.
It's a thing.
So maybe it's more, do you feel like maybe it's more accepted here because it's more people are doing that?
For sure. You still have to prove yourself. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those ones where you're like, I can get in a room. If, you know, I could have a meeting with someone and play them my music, just even if I know them as they know me as a bass player, for example. I could get a meeting with someone and be like, hey, I'd love to play some music. And I know them personally in a working relationship for me as a bass player or as a musical director or whatever. And they would listen to my music. That's the one difference I've found. Whereas there's not many people in the UK that have done that for me. And that's my personal experience. Mm. And everyone's experience is different.
What other goals do you have? I know you're a very live in the moment type of person, but you must have some goals.
No, I have I never told you about my list.
No. What list?
All right.
No, you've never told me about a list.
Okay. I carry around a list.
No way. My wallet,
and I have done this since I was 16. This is my third list of life goals. And I tick them off. So
can you read some of them?
No.
No?
No, these...
Anything you want to share. So you can't share anything from the list.
I'm not going to share anything from list number 3. Apart from move to LA.
When did you write this third list?
2014.
Wow. So move to LA is on there.
I've ticked off 9 things. Learn to drive has not been ticked off.
Yeah. You need to work on that.
It's sad times. But I'll call myself out on that one. There's a lot of things I haven't done.
That is really cool. I did not know that.
I mean, so basically, it kind of...
So how many things are on the list? You said you checked off 9.
And there's like 14 on that one.
Wow.
But I wrote a list when I was 16, before I moved to London, of everything I wanted to achieve. Or I think it was 16, 17. I was at college. And it was like, I wanted to play in Jazz Cafe. I wanted to play at Ronnie Scott's. I wanted to have a bass endorsement. I wanted to get a pop gig. And that was kind of it. There was some like little things like move to London and go to the university that I went to. And I did those. And I kind of thought that was cool. And I'm a religious guy. And I attached a lot of that to that. And that was something I found quite that was good. And then I did another one. And I wanted the second one to be more challenging. And I kind of had some fun with it. And I was like, okay, cool. I want to play Wembley Stadium. And I want to do a TV show. And I'm like, whatever.
And you've done all those things. Bass Guitar Magazine,
right. And then I did that. And then it was just like, okay, cool. I'm just going to keep pushing myself. And then that's kind of what I do, which is why a big thing of, you know, achieving everything I did with Jesse and all the bass playing stuff. And I kind of moved on. I did a record and basement project and I moved on. And I'm a goals guy. Like, even though the last few years I've been living in the moment, there's always a bigger goal. I carry that list around with me every day.
So do you like to keep those to yourself?
Yeah, a lot of them. I mean, I might tell you off record, like not to the
world. But also maybe, do you feel like you might be jinxing it if you tell someone? It's more special, something to have for yourself. Okay, I want to accomplish this. And then you do it. And you're doing it for yourself. You're not doing it for anybody else.
I don't feel like I'll jinx it.
Okay.
And I feel like if it doesn't happen, I don't mind.
Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you've accomplished so many things that you've written on your list. I mean, everything you just named off.
Yeah, it's been really cool.
I think writing things down is really important. I've had that in my life. I've manifested things that I've written down, or people I've even wanted to bring on the show, for example. Mm-hmm. I just think there is so much power in writing down those goals. And you've inspired me right now, carrying around a list in your wallet. Like, I want to do that now. Like, can I take that from you? Mm-hmm. You really just inspired me to do that. Because you're carrying it with you, and you're sending that out to the universe that those are things that you want to happen.
I mean, I kind of don't think about it too much anymore, especially the last, like, this last one's taking a long time, and the stuff I wrote down, and things I'd love to achieve are challenging and in their own way, and it's not work related and they're mm-hmm. just life stuff, and it's that's just something I do for myself, and I don't think it's any bigger than that. And I do think writing stuff down is always a good thing, and that was something that Betty Wright told me.
Mm.
And she was telling me, it's like, always good to write things down. For that reason, what you're saying manifests itself, and, mm-hmm. and it's just good to visually see something, because everyone can have something in their head and they'll be like, oh, yeah, I really want to put out a record, I'm going to do a record. But if you don't write down, like, I'm going to make a record, there's something in doing that that just makes it a little bit more serious, or you take yourself a bit seriously.
Yeah.
But that's not a statement of, like, well, I'm writing it down, so, you know, I'm doing all this. It's, you know, whatever works,
mm-hmm.
you know, for each person, and everyone's individual, and everyone finds their own way of achieving stuff if they want to, and that's mine.
So do you have a release date in mind for your new music?
The first record's like fully mixed and mastered. Shout out to Jesse Ernster, so for doing that. Yeah, so that one's done, and then the other two just need to get mixed and mastered. And in terms of a release or how I want to do it, I don't really know. I'm kind of shopping it around. At some point, I'll just drop it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I'm working it out.
Cool.
It's, you know.
Well, I'm proud of you.
Thanks.
I'm proud of you for moving here, for working your ass off, for, you know, crossing things off your list, accomplishing all those goals. And we got to work on the driving. Let's get you learning to drive here in LA.
It's terrible. I can't believe I've done 2 years without driving.
I don't know how you've lived in LA without driving.
I've walked so much.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll put it on your goals for this year.
It's been on there since 2014. So, unfortunately.
Phil, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It was so lovely to have you. And I'm looking forward to your new music release and seeing everything you're going to accomplish this year.
Thanks, Rachel. You too.
And that concludes today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed my conversation with Phil. I'm going to leave you with a little sneak peek of his new music coming out soon. This is Drive, taken from Phil's record, Saint Arc, Part 1, In the Yoke.